Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new film, Front Runner, hits theaters this weekend. The film tells the real story of the favored candidate in the 1988 presidential campaign, Gary Hart.
Do you feel like you have a traditional marriage? There is no privacy. The cameras go everywhere.
The one thing I ever asked was don't embarrass me.
Senator. He had sex with that woman.
Can't be serious. There's no need for that.
Don't you think you owe it to us to be forthcoming?
Owe you?
You're running for president.
I'm aware of that, Tom. It's in the paper.
Well, you have a responsibility.
I know full well what my responsibilities are. Do you know yours?
The Front Runner's a great film that takes us back to the scandal that rocked the political world, Hart's affair with Donna Rice. That affair effectively destroyed the political career of Hart, who was considered a shoo-in for the Democratic nomination. But it also explores the cultural moment in politics, a moment that determined whether or not there's a distinction between public and private life. The Front Runner has a great cast. It stars Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart. It's the latest film from award-winning filmmaker Jason Reitman. Reitman was on this program for his last movie, The Wonderful Tully, with Charlize Theron. And it's my pleasure to welcome him back. Jason Reitman, welcome to The Download.
Thank you very much. I feel like we literally just spoke yesterday.
This film is so interesting because this is, for you, talk about the idea of taking on a story that America knows well.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I did not know it well. You know, I heard a Radiolab piece on the Gary Hart scandal centered around Matt Bai's book, and I was unfamiliar with the story. I couldn't believe that in our recent history there was a moment in which the presumed next president of the United States wound up in his alleyway in the middle of the night with these other journalists, and no one knew what to do because no one had ever been in their shoes before.
For our generation, I mean, I'm 44 years old, mm-hmm. and I feel like I was probably in eighth grade, seventh grade when that mm-hmm. happened. And your movie goes into detail about the story, much of which I did not know or do not remember. But there's this lasting impact from this story that Gary Hart on a all I remember is Gary Hart on a boat.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they caught him on a boat, and he was no longer fit to be president.
Well, that's what's interesting. What we remember is the tabloid version of the story.
Right.
A party on a book, on a boat, a blonde woman, and that perhaps he had told the journalist to follow him around. And the truth was that you had this very capable and charismatic candidate who did not tell the journalist to follow him around. He had given one quote to the New York Times that actually came out the same day as this Miami Herald piece. And within a week, he left politics forever. And it really raises a lot of questions. You know, it raises questions about kind of our responsibility in all this.
Yeah. I loved it because it wasn't just about a political campaign in the inside, which was tremendous to watch that. That was the frenzy and the chaos that goes along with that and such great acting and great part of the film. But it was also just about the press and what was considered a story, what was considered a scandal, and what the lines were that were drawn on what you could cover and what you couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, this was all news to me, but this prior to 1987, candidates and journalists spent time together. They socialized together. They went to drink and they ate and together. And this was the moment when the wall went up and candidates began to be protected by their press secretaries and every moment became managed. And it was the moment in which we really demonstrated a desire to know who these candidates were as human beings. And we didn't know what the line would be. We're still trying to figure that out today.
Right. I wonder, and the part of the film that's just still, I mean, obviously the what happened in the aftermath of Gary Hart having to jump out of the campaign, but I wonder how much we did care as the voting population, and how much that this was something that we even thought was possible, because there's a great line in the film. I think the editors are around at the Washington Post talking about Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson and what they said and what they knew at the time, and everybody just kind of assumed that to be a part of politics, and it wasn't something that would necessarily down a campaign.
Yeah, and certainly Hart didn't think that it was anybody's business. You know, Hart, I think, went into that campaign presuming that his public life was his public life and his private life was his private life. And obviously what was fascinating is that this man who was prescient about all things, you know, a guy who in the 80s said, this country's addicted to oil. That addiction will take us into the Middle East, where we will encounter Islamic terrorism. We won't know how to fight it. We have a military that only knows how to bomb people, who is so prescient about education, about computers. For whatever reason, literally could not see the landscape shifting right in front of him, where the whole world was telling him, hey, your personal life matters now.
Right.
And he just couldn't see it.
What you, obviously, being a filmmaker and taking on this story, and it's a lot about the scandal, but as you just mentioned, it was a lot about Gary Hart himself as a candidate, not only in 84, but in 88. What did you learn about Gary Hart, the politician, from doing this film?
I mean, that he was a capable and politician, that he would have probably made a pretty great president, and that he was a flawed human being like the rest of us. He's someone who'd made mistakes. And that's what makes him kind of such a great test case. I mean, things have gotten so out of proportion. We have such an indecent president that it's almost impossible to evaluate anymore what flaws we are willing to put up with in our leaders. Here you go back 30 years and you have a guy who was clearly, you know, brilliant and charismatic, and because of that, he serves as his great test case of, okay, yeah, he also is a human being with flaws. How do we discuss this? How do we investigate this? What do we want to know? What is the line? What is the difference between what is important and what is entertaining?
And there's something, I mean, the beauty of it is watching his staff, his campaign staff,
right,
deal with this, some taking it very serious, some saying it's none of the bit, but just even the turmoil in politics and whether or not this scandal was something that they should,
right,
give their whole body to or their whole being to.
Well, you know, this was a script that was co-written by Matt Bye, New York Times Magazine journalist, covered five different presidencies. It was co-written by Jay Carson, who was a political operative, press secretary for Hillary Clinton, right, in 2008, and Howard Dean, and a few different senators who remain in Congress to this day. So it was a screenplay that was written with the perspective of the people who work in this world. And we wanted the newspaper floors and the campaign trail, the bus, the plane, we wanted to feel as real as humanly possible. The movie is made in a way so it just drops you into the middle of the campaign. And all this information is coming at you. Three different conversations are happening at once. And we're trying to do the same thing philosophically that we are doing cinematically. We're trying to get you as viewers to figure out, all right, what's important to you? What conversation do you want to follow? When two conversations are happening at once, an important one and an innocuous fun one, what do you want to listen to? Where do your eyes go? Where do your ears go?
As a director, you essentially embarked on a period piece. This was a 1987 film.
Yeah.
You had to use a lot of what 1987 looked like. Do you like that as a director?
It's tough. I'll be honest. It's almost easier to make a movie about 1787 because, you know, if you get 1787 wrong, if you're off by a couple decades, no one's going to call you on it. No one's going to be like, you know, that's really more 1797. You get 1987 off by a few months and people will call you on it. So we had to be very precise with the hair, the wardrobe, the color, the cars, all the equipment, the camera equipment and video equipment. It's the kind of thing where we knew you had to be precise. We knew we had to get it right. So,
Only that, but there are familiar faces. You have a Ted Koppel in the film,
right,
you know, this footage that is used. So there is this familiarity and this feeling that you're when you're doing any piece that is in current times. I mean,
mm-hmm,
we're now talking 30 years ago, but this idea that there definitely is something that people are reminiscent of and they know it, so they almost can use their own experiences,
right,
against what you're portraying.
Well, it was a front page story and we had all this incredible footage to work from, you know, so the radio reporters, the TV reporters, Ted Koppel, I mean, this is real footage, Jane Pauley. I mean, we were able to kind of integrate this footage into the film, which kind of reminds you of how real it was. But also, it's the questions that we're asking in this film that are the questions we're literally asking every moment these days.
Well, that's what I love about the film is it is a period piece, and we have seen a lot of the films in the last 20, 30 years that have done the Wag the Dog kind of vibe where you have a political candidate that we all know being played by John Travolta, and we get really into the idea, does he look like him? Does he talk like him? All that kind of stuff. But what I really love about this film is that it's almost a vessel to have a conversation about what's happening in 2018 when it comes to our politics and what is considered scandal through the eyes of this country and a story that is well known 30 years mm-hmm. ago.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm like anyone alive today. I look around on the world and I go, how the hell did we get here? You know, I think most people would say, no matter kind of, you know, what side of the fence they sit on, that the system seems broken. And looking back, we look for these seeds. We look for these kind of threads to pull on and figure that out. And the Heart story is a first time. It's just a first time where, you know, political journalism and tabloid journalism drove into the same lane and became intertwined there. And it's a story through which you could talk about gender politics. It's a story through which you can really talk about that line between the public and private life.
It's interesting too. Hugh Jackman is great, and he gives a great performance. Mm-hmm. And there's this thought again. You're looking at him as what we know the footage, the real footage of Gary Hart. What did you have to do to get him to be Gary Hart?
Yeah.
You know, like yeah.
Hugh Jackman works harder than any other actor. I mean, it's kind of what he's known for. Whether he's being P.T. Barnum or Wolverine, whether it's a fight scene or a dance sequence. I mean. Nobody works harder. And he knew speeches that Hart gave that were not in the script. He knew talking points. We could put him in press conferences where he didn't know where the questions were going to come from. There's this axe throw in the movie where he has to bullseye an axe. And we had bets going on when he would hit it. He hit it on the first take. And then we had to do 8 more takes because the actors couldn't get their dialogue down as well as Hugh could throw an axe. And he happens to also just be lovely. He's decent to everybody. I remember at one point on another film, he realized he wanted to know the crew better. He thought, why don't I know everyone's name? Why aren't I talking to the entire crew every day? And he started every Friday stopping at a grocery store on the way to set, picking up 200 scratcher tickets and handing out lottery tickets one by one to the crew, shaking every hand, wishing them good luck that day, just so he could just feel like he had a better relationship with everybody.
There's Hugh Jackman, the one thing that I've heard from people, you know, I talked to my parents, talked to others about Gary Hart and getting ready for this, that there was a visceral anger in mm-hmm. Gary Hart when he had to go through this, when mm-hmm. when the press was asking him about this. His response was not, as we see now, staged or, you know, like, I'm going to read from this press. He showed a lot of anger and resentment towards the media, which is in the film, and it's a big mm-hmm. part of it. How do you get an actor to explore that?
Have you seen Wolverine? I mean, that's the funny thing, is that he's such a lovely actor, and his ability to suddenly portray rage is just unreal. He turns on a dime, and then I say cut, and he's smiling, and he's lovely to everyone again. So, like, I don't know how he does it. You know, with Hart, if you can embody his reasoning, then I think you can embody his anger. Now, he may not have been right. He may have had blinders on, mm-hmm. and that kind of depends on kind of how you view things. But from his inner logic, he thought, there are important things happening in the world right now. And you got to remember, I mean, this is a, you know, Hart as a senator knew Russia as well as anybody, knew the Middle East as well as anybody, saw how computing was going to change the economy as well as anybody. And he's sitting there looking at the next 30 years of our country, and he turned out to be right about all this stuff. And he's going, wait, you want to talk to me about a boat? So I can understand his frustration.
Right.
Now, on the other side of that, there's a question of, well, how do you see women? Are you a womanizer? Do you see women as human beings or as objects? And that's a real conversation, and one he was not ready to have, and one, frankly, he needed to have.
And a question about judgment. That seemed to be a big through line with the reporters about whether or not Gary Hart's judgment, making decisions as he's doing in his personal life, would affect how he would make judgments on behalf of the country.
I suppose so, but what we have to remember, and it's easy to kind of lose sight of that in this modern era during the Me Too movement, is that this is not the story of a whistleblower. This is the story of two very private people who met and suddenly were thrust into a very public moment. Donna Rice has stayed quiet for 30 years. Donna Rice has been offered a lot of money for her story and never taken it. And it's interesting because, you know, when I would tell people, you know, I'm going to make the Gary Hart movie, people would ask me, oh, what are you doing next? I'd say, you know, the Gary Hart story. And they would say, oh, right. Monkey business. What was her name? What was that blonde's name? And they would talk about Donna Rice as though she were an object and not a human being.
Yeah.
And so what I tried to do was make a movie about human beings, and particularly with Donna, kind of play with the audience's perception of who she was. What is this story going to be? Is this going to be a salacious movie about a boat? Or is this going to be a movie in which we look at all the characters, not just Gary Hart, not just Donna Rice. Let's look at Lee Hart. Let's look at the people on his campaign who, like anyone on a political campaign, you're just ready to sacrifice everything. You sacrifice your entire life to get this person elected. It's a very easy thing to understand as these kind of midterms approach, how much we're willing to sacrifice. Look at these journalists who are under pressure in a different way for the first time that we could totally feel the echoes of today.
And I thought you did a great job of exploring the chaos of this story. The media scrums of him getting out of the car to go give his speech, to how the media camped out in front of the home, how the media treated Donna Rice. There was this idea of the almost, as you said, this is the first time in modern politics. This felt like a first time. Like they didn't know, no one knew how to handle this thing. And then you juxtapose that to what we know in 2018. We almost pick our candidates, as we see with the president right now, based on how they can handle that scrutiny, how they can handle those big chaotic moments.
Right. And this is a comment that would come back from everyone I spoke to. The journalists I spoke to, the campaign people I spoke to, was the level of noise from 84 to 88 was just... completely changed, it did become a hurricane of noise. It did suddenly feel like Hollywood paparazzi, where before that, it did not feel that way. And there was a kind of a generational divide between the older journalists, who were Hart's friends, who they like spent time together, they knew each other, and this younger generation that grew up admiring Woodward and Bernstein. You know, they were like kids when All the President's Men came out. They have this new vision of the job of a journalist. And simultaneously, you're coming into the first generation coming off of the birth of the primary system. You know, for the first time, we move from candidates being chosen by party bosses in back rooms at conventions to, all right, the primaries are now going to be thrown into the hands of the voters. They have to pick, you know, who these candidates are. And it becomes the job of the journalists, starting in the mid-70s, to inform us, okay, who are these candidates really? Who are these people? You know, I know I'm supposed to kind of pick a candidate out of some governor from a state I don't know and some congressman from another state I don't know. And who are they? And so the investigative conundrum for the journalists has kind of just come into effect. And because of that, you have this scrum. Not to mention the birth of tabloid television, the 24-hour news cycle, CNN journalists getting those satellite funds so they can kind of report from anywhere. It's all happening at once. And the noise was apparently chaotic. So as a filmmaker, that's a huge challenge. How do you create messiness? It's almost easier to control, to create like a Kubrickian, clean, very stylized, specific, to create this kind of more Altman-esque or Michael Ritchie-style craziness to make it out of control. I'm a director. I want to control everything. Right, I want to control, you know, the seat that I'm sitting on right now, you know? So the idea of kind of just handing over the set, we would wire 20 actors at a time, and our production sound mixer would be literally trying to balance three different conversations that are all coming into our headphones at the same time.
That's just amazing. And you see it right at the beginning of the film and throughout. Yes, you're right. There is a lot of chaos that can't be controlled. And as a director, I'm way impressed of being able to capture that as on purpose. You know, like there'll be a lot of directors who might do it more, you know, gonzo, who are picking up something in different ways. But to have a conversation going on, to have a camera shot from far away, to be able to have Hugh Jackman as Gary Hart thrown into this scrum and be able to follow him, where it doesn't feel like the press is, maybe you did, but you're telling this person or that person to stand here or stand there. It's just a free-for-all.
Right. Well, and I mentioned this earlier. The big question in the movie is, what is important? What is important versus what is entertaining? So from the very first shot of the film, we have this sprawling 2.5-minute shot where you're following all these different characters, and it finally lands on Hugh Jackman. But throughout most of it, you're meeting these characters, and you're trying to figure out, wait, who am I supposed to follow? Who is important? You're getting one conversation about, you know, the 84 presidential election, and then you're getting a story about someone trying to jumpstart a golf cart. What is this? And then you're hearing a TV piece playing out of a news van, and you're getting one thing on top of the other. And from moment one, you're being told as an audience, all right, there's going to be way too much information. It's almost like one of those old, like, SAT math problems where, like, you're giving too much information about the farmer and how many carrots he needs to bring to the market, and you have to kind of decide for yourself, all right, what's important and what's unimportant.
Yeah. I guess my final question is about Gary Hart. And, you know, as we are in 2018 and scandals and affairs seem to be old hat. I mean, now we're at a point where it doesn't seem to move the needle one way or another. It is not a judge. How is history going to look at Gary Hart? And we look back 30 years now. Is he a sympathetic character?
I mean, well, that's the question. I think up until Matt Bai's book about him, I think history had largely forgotten Gary Hart. I think he had become a tabloid story, a joke, the name of a boat, a photograph. And there's this real question of, all right, what did we give up in less than a week? And that's the part of the story that always comes back to me. It's a thriller. You know, on one day, you have a guy who's going to be the next president, and in less than a week, he leaves politics forever. He likes to say that he feels like that he's at the end of High Noon, and he threw his sheriff star on the ground. And, you know, perhaps that's not, you know, completely accurate. But we as a country kind of decided, all right, we'd kind of dismiss this guy in less than a week. And I talked to people today, and they kind of have a similar kind of humorous kind of point of view on him. That, you know, yeah. I bring him up and they go, oh, Gary Hart, what did you do? Right. And it's like, well, what did we do? And I guess that's his lasting memory is not his great ideas, sadly, but this question of what do we want to know about our candidates? And the truth is, it's somewhere in between. All these tabloids, the stories that come out on a daily basis, they do matter now. But when we talk about sex, we have to ask ourselves always, what are we not talking about?
Right. The Front Runner is a new film. It's in theaters this weekend. Jason Reitman, the award-winning filmmaker who co-wrote and directed the film. Thanks again for coming in, talking about a great film, and we'll catch you in the next one.
It's a pleasure to be here. I don't know if it's going to be 5 months this time, but I can't wait to be back.